I'd like to thank Dr. Kelligar for the introduction. It's always a pleasure to get up here. It's also very interesting for this discussion today because we have two somewhat different viewpoints looking at the same thing. One from ongoing surveys that we do of membership within the American Academy of Family Physicians, and then a very specialized survey that Dr. McQuillan is going to be talking about that looks particularly at the delay issue. So without further ado, let me just let you know that what I'm going to be talking about is a series of 4 years of surveys done within the American Academy and funded through a cooperative agreement from the CDC. I always like to put things into context. The American Academy of Family Physicians has 94,000 members. We provide care across the age span and across the spectrum of disease categories, organ systems, and so on. And if you take a look at that map, that just is a graphical representation of the counties in this country shown in red that would be primary care health shortage areas if you pulled away the family physicians. So we provide an awful lot of care across the country, and especially think of inner cities and rural areas. But family docs are very, very important for the overall vaccine delivery system in the United States. Now I'm going to reveal some of my background from a liberal arts education and just pick up on some comments that Angela made early on about influenza vaccine. And there are a couple of figures in Greek mythology. One is Prometheus, and every morning he gets up and he's chained to a rock because this is the person who gave fire to humans. He was one of the gods and he's being punished. So every day he wakes up and throughout the day a vulture comes down and eats his liver. And then overnight it regenerates and this happens again. The other figure is Sisyphus, who was punished for something else and ends up pushing a huge boulder up a mountain every day, and then it gets to the top and rolls back on down, only to start again. This is what we do with influenza vaccination in this country. Unlike all the other immunizations, these are things that are repeated year after year, and it's the same pattern, and it's pushing that boulder up to the top of the hill, only to have it roll down again and get ready for next year. Well, as we all know, availability can be a gamble. Why is that? Manufacturing problems, there can be issues with contamination, the virus seed strains might not grow very well on chicken eggs, there can be enhanced demand. Back in 2004, there were a lot of pediatric deaths, and all of a sudden, we could not keep up with demand. The vaccine delivery within primary care is really complex. We start making orders in January through March, but we also have to plan staffing issues. We have to do advertising. We have to do notifications, so postcards, all these things have to be done in advance. And so when there is a delay of vaccine, there can be some pretty significant consequences. They can be financial, they can be in terms of patient satisfaction, and they can also manifest in terms of long-term clinician attitudes. As you recall, in 2004, there was a really, really big shortage. Total amount of vaccine shipped that year was 57 million doses. In 2005 and 2006, there were both some mild shipping delays compared to some of the historically good years. Well, the purpose of what we have been doing within AAFP is to better define usual administration of influenza vaccine, looking at some of the problems encountered providing this service, and again, doing this through now 4 annual membership surveys. And today we're just going to really be concentrating on the problems with acquisition and distribution of influenza vaccine. Well, the design is cross-sectional mail surveys, non-responders receiving 1 to 2 additional mailings. The approaches are compared between years and between groups using standard statistical methods. And this covers all 50 states plus the District of Columbia. There have been a variety of number of surveys going out, anywhere from about 2,000, 2007, 2006 it was 5,000. And this goes out to clinically active members. And outcome measures are a variety of things. And again, we're only going to be talking about part of this, but the spectrum of care, the current provision of vaccines, clinical approaches, and the sources of recommendations. Well, let's get into results. Modest return rates. Again, this is done not as a scientific approach to survey science, but more to try and gauge where our members are. The analysis that I'm going to show you, though, are limited to those docs who are spending 80% of their time in clinical practice. This is about 90% of the overall respondents. And so let's just jump into some of the data here. Vaccine remaining at the end of the season. This is vaccine that has been purchased by the clinic, and we asked how many of you have leftover unused vaccine when you reach the end of the season when you're not immunizing for influenza anymore. In 2005-2006 season, it was a little over 30%. It increased up over 50% in 2006-2007. This is a slide I used last year, but I think it's very appropriate by one of our practicing physicians. Any service provided at loss multiplied by volume is bankruptcy. I think Delta Airlines is experiencing this right now with the fuel costs. Well, if we take a look just at this last survey done in 2007, most of our docs said, well, despite the problems, we're going to continue to provide vaccine, and we're planning for the 2007-2008 season. And this was really not changed at all. We had 89.7%, which was statistically equal to the previous year at 90.1%. So that's been holding pretty even. Multiple reasons were given by 9.6% of our respondents for not giving vaccine. And in the next graphics, I'm going to show you differences between the 2006 and 2007 surveys. In 2007, fewer people said they can't recover the cost, so it dropped from 38 down to about 32%. How about too difficult to obtain? Well, that actually got better, went from 31% down to 18. I see that as good. But take a look at what happens with vaccine available elsewhere. We're going from 29 to 35%. All these comparisons are statistically significant. Okay, well, let's just focus in on the delays in receiving vaccine for 2006-2007 year. And it turns out that 54.9% clinicians, this is from the 2007 survey, but they were looking backwards at that previous year, but almost 55% said they experienced delay in receiving vaccine, 35% not delayed, and about 11% did not know. Well, what does this mean? Again, here we're comparing two different years, but there was a big jump between 2005-2006 and 2006-2007 in terms of people saying they had leftover vaccine. It jumped up from 32% up to 50%. And if we take a look at the percentage of vaccine remaining unused within your refrigerator at your clinic, there was a tendency for that amount of unused vaccine to increase in percentage. So for example, are those people experiencing leftover vaccine in 2005-06, about 60% said, oh, it's only about 1 to 10% of our stock. But take a look at those yellow bars, and those are really increasing in the 11 to 20, the 21 to 30, and the 31 plus. So this means that clinics and physicians are holding on to more stock at the end of the season. Again, think of that, any service provided at a loss multiplied by number, and you get a picture of what's going on. Now, one of the questions, this is just focusing at 2006-2007 year, but asking the people, did you have or did you experience delays or not? So no delay is in yellow and delayed is in blue. And we asked whether or not there was any difference between the amount of stock people had left over. And there is no significant difference between people who had delays and people who did not have delays. in terms of the distribution or the amount of that stock left over at the end. However, take a look at that 31 plus, and there's quite a bit difference. It's not enough to raise or rise up to any statistical significance there, but at least that caught my attention there. Well, you know, if it isn't just the delays, what else might be going on to explain things? Well, the last thing I'm going to show in terms of data is just a trend over 2005, 2006, and 2007. And we're seeing that a subtle but significant drop in family physicians who are planning to order vaccine. The last 2 years have been stable, but after the 2004-2005 year when there was a lot of shortage, that, I think, soured some people out there. All right. Well, the number of family docs with unused vaccine increased between 2006 and 2007, even though the vaccine was easier to obtain. Majority of the family docs experienced vaccine delivery delays in 2006 and 7. There were mild delays overall and a large amount of vaccine out there. But at least in our data, the amount of unused vaccine was not related to the reported delays, and this just deals with this past year. Well, again, family docs are important in terms of providing influenza vaccine and are a vital component of our influenza prevention system. But they are highly susceptible to the effect of delays and shortages, and these can have manifold consequences. But I think there are many factors out there just beyond the supply and demand that may influence the intent to vaccinate. Let me go into a little bit more detail here. I think as we get more and more vaccine to deliver, because our target size is increasing all the time, we're going to start facing some very physical bounds in terms of what we can actually get out there in terms of routine and regular practice, which is going to, I think, start manifesting in difficulty to adequately plan and predict how much you're going to need. As we have more and more alternate site suppliers out there, and a free market system where a patient can either come into my clinic, which might have a delay, or can go to the grocery store, to the pharmacy, or other sources like that, those are going to have perhaps some profound effects on delivery. So I worry about some of the effects that we might have in terms of supply, demand, and target size on the immunization practices in the medical home, and I think it requires a lot of thought to go in to how best to provide this service to as many people as we possibly can. I'm going to stop there, and I think have time for a couple of questions here. Yes?
I have a question about the issue of delay. Did you define delay for the practices in terms of delay in getting their vaccine, or did you give them a time frame when they got their vaccine? Because I don't know whether you're familiar with it or not, but I know CDC did some work last year because there was the perception from a lot of practitioners that they had a delay in vaccine, and their data shows just the opposite. So I was just curious to know whether you defined delay for them in terms of getting their vaccine, or you gave a time frame when they got their vaccine and they could check that off. And then the other thing that is always interesting for me is that we had 102 million doses of vaccine last year, but we had over 180 million people that were recommended to get vaccinated. So I don't know whether you want to care to comment on what the disparities in between those two numbers are. Why, when you've got that big of a population and you have only 102 million doses of vaccine, why do we still have extra vaccine to actually get administered to people? And I think that may be the real key to sort of solving that issue of how do we get all that those people vaccinated?
Well, the first question, and I beg to apologize, my two co-authors are sitting in the front row, Dr. Herb Young, who is the Director of the Division of Scientific Activities at the AAFP, and Belinda Schuf, who is also with the Division on Scientific Activities. As I recall from the survey, we did not define delays. We just asked kind of that cold question, did you experience delays? And I think, to be perfectly honest with you, if you've set your agenda to start immunizing at a certain date and you don't have vaccine, most people are going to say that's a delay. Okay, but we didn't define it any more than that. In terms of trying to hit this target, and I fully agree that the recommendations out there, if you follow them even before our expansion up to age 18, if you look at that target, that's 60% of the American public. And we don't get there. And we especially don't get there with children. We don't get there with children who are asthmatics. We don't get there with healthcare providers. There are a lot of people out there. I think we hit 10% of pregnant women, 10 to 12%. And some of the biggest predictors are physician recommendation, especially in some of these groups. So there are some physician-driven things there. I'm always shocked by my clinic that we typically use all the vaccine we have, but for the patient population we have, we order about a third of vaccine compared to what we should give. And I think one of the problems is, do you want to, you know, order sufficient for 60% of your patient population, knowing full well that you're going to have half that left over at the end of the season because you've never been able to get that much out before. And so the financing issues are such that we leave it to that clinic, to the health system, or that individual solo practitioner to have all that financial burden. So I think that's part of the problem. The other is just acceptance by the population in general. There are a lot of people who avoid it for whatever reason. Question here.
Yeah, it's sort of a follow-up question to that.
Can you please present yourself?
Myself? Yes. Here I am. You want my name?
Okay.
Drew Bernstein from Maryland, sorry.
Thank you.
I've never been asked to present myself, so I'm sorry. My question actually was a follow-up to the previous question. If indeed the delay does not influence the volume of vaccine which is left at the end of the season, so then it would imply that there are two possible scenarios. Either there was not enough demand, or the family doc didn't estimate correctly and pre-ordering or determining how much to order. And so my question would be, how do you think your members actually go about evaluating the environment and selecting how much to order? And do you notice any difference in those practices which are more technologically advanced? They have an electronic medical record. They have some sort of system in place to do reminder recalls, anything like that. I mean, are you able to parse out the data to sort of get a better handle as to whether we're any good as providers at really getting a handle on what demand and how much supply to order to reach that demand is going to be?
First question, stay tuned to the next presentation because I think they're going to provide a slightly different viewpoint there in terms of the relationship between delay and unused stock. Okay, and I will be the first to admit that their survey is done using much better survey techniques. Number two, history. How do we order the vaccine? How much did we order last year? Okay. I think there's a large bit of historical weight that goes into predicting that. And question number three, we're writing this down because we have a lot of this information and we have on our agenda a much broader assessment analysis, but I do believe we do have some information on EMRs on a number of these. I know in at least the later surveys we have that. And that may be able to help, both talking about that and use of registries, but we haven't looked at that specifically yet. Oh, did you?
Well, from 06, we did ask the question, how do you determine how much influence a vaccine to order? And the largest response was 71%, 72% said prior year's experience. Interestingly, about 30% said, someone else orders the vaccine for me. So we have to recognize that the physician answering this may not be the one who determines how much their healthcare system orders for vaccine. A registry system was cited for 12%. And some indicated 15%, a prior year growth or decrease was somehow considered. But then that's as far as we'd gone in 06.
But I think that really kind of underscores that historical approach. I think, do we have time for one more question?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Matt Daly from University of Colorado. I wonder if you could comment a little further on the relationship between vaccine available elsewhere in the community and then delays, and whether you've looked within your data at those who perceived that there was a lot of vaccine available in their community had more delays.
We have not looked at that, and I don't know. Though we do have data on physicians who decide not to order vaccine because it's so widely available elsewhere. And that's been a component that has been increasing out there. We have kind of this large assemblage of data, and if you parse it out, we have solo practitioners in there that are essentially independent businessmen. You have small groups, which are small groups, which tend to be independent businesses as well. Then you have large health systems mixed in. And the smaller groups probably are much more prone to that economic gamble in terms of ordering. So those are things that, again, as we're going more in detail looking at the data, that we will try and parse out. But I think that's a very, very important component out there. But yeah, seriously, I think the one thing that we saw increasing was the vaccine is widely available elsewhere, and that may influence the decision not to order vaccine or as much previously. And so all these things really kind of hit together.